Right now, 71% of knowledge workers are basically terrified of losing their jobs to artificial intelligence. And, you might actually be one of them. The anxiety is just
Oh,
everywhere.
totally. It's inescapable right now.
Right. But then, behind closed corporate doors, like 95% of AI investments are currently producing zero return on investment,
Yes.
which is, well, welcome to the weird contradiction of our
Yeah,
time.
it's a massive disconnect.
Exactly. You're caught in this tug of war between, headlines promising a post-scarcity utopia by the weekend, and then articles predicting that some wealth-hoarding algorithm is going to render your entire career obsolete before you even finish your morning coffee.
Which is incredibly paralyzing for people just trying to plan their lives.
Totally. So if that relentless whiplash feels overwhelming to you, I promise you are not alone, which is why today's deep dive is just so crucial. We are pulling apart this brilliant essay published on March 10th, 2026, titled The Intelligence Curse Revisited.
Right, part five of the AI Field Notes series.
Yes, exactly. But to really understand it, we kind of have to look backward for a second. So in late 2024, two very influential essays dropped and essentially planted the seeds for all this modern panic.
Yeah, the heavy hitters.
Right. First, there was Luke Drago's piece, The Intelligence Curse. And then Rudolph Lane's Capital, AGI, and Human Ambition.
And those two essays painted a remarkably bleak picture. I mean, Drago argued that AI would behave like a resource curse in macroeconomics.
Like with oil, right.
Exactly. Think about countries that discover massive, easily extractable oil reserves. Instead of that wealth trickling down, the people in power often just sell the oil, hoard the cash, and completely stop investing in their own citizens' education or, infrastructure.
Which is a terrifying analogy for tech.
It really is. Drago suggested AI would do the exact same thing to human cognition. Like, if a corporation could just buy intelligence directly from a server farm, why would they ever invest the time and money to train a junior employee?
Right. And then Lane took that grim theory and just like amplified it to a 10. He predicted this scenario of permanent wealth lock-in.
Yeah, the ladder pulling scenario.
Exactly. His argument was that whoever controlled the dominant amount of capital at the exact moment artificial general intelligence or AGI finally arrived would just pull the ladder up behind them. Outlier human success would just, die out.
And we should probably clarify AGI here, just since the term gets thrown around so loosely.
Oh, for sure. We aren't just talking about a really smart chatbot. Artificial general intelligence refers to a hypothetical system that can understand, learn, and apply knowledge across basically any unscripted, broad range of tasks at a level equal to or better than a human.
Right. And Lenin's fear was that once you have that, capital just converts itself into superhuman capability infinitely, and the rest of society is just permanently locked out.
It is such a terrifying premise, but here is the mission for our deep dive today. Those essays were theoretical. They were written in 2024 before we had any real sustained economic data to actually test those apocalyptic predictions against.
Which we finally have now.
Exactly. And now we have 12 months of hard, unforgiving data from the trenches. So we are going to put those doomsayers to the test. We're separating the narrative hype from the economic reality so you know exactly where you stand today. Okay, let's unpack this.
The best place to ground this reality check is a labor market report, Anthropic, released on March 5th, 2026. The author of our source essay really zeroes in on this one specific finding regarding theoretical versus actual AI adoption.
Oh, the radar chart, right?
Yes, that radar
Yes.
chart is wild. We've spent 2 years mapping out everything AI could theoretically do in knowledge work, finance, legal analysis, admin computing. And the blue area on this chart, the theoretical exposure, is massive.
Huge.
But then there's this tiny red sliver representing the actual measured day-to-day adoption of these tools inside corporate workflows. It's shockingly tiny.
I love the analogy the author used to visualize this. It's like looking at this sprawling map of the world's oceans, but then realizing humanity has only actually learned how to sail on a tiny puddle in the driveway.
That is exactly it.
The gap between the ocean of theoretical capability and the puddle of actual corporate deployment is basically the entire story of the global economy right now.
It's a perfect metaphor.
Yeah.
And, as an important side note, physical labor categories like construction, plumbing, transportation, they barely even register on that theoretical map yet.
So it's mostly white-collar panic.
Entirely. This disruption is isolated to knowledge work. So, looking at the scorecard, we have to ask, where did Drago and Lalaine actually get it right?
Well, the most glaring validation is definitely the collapse of the entry-level job market. The numbers are frankly staggering. Junior tech hiring didn't just dip. it plummeted 67% between 2023 and 2024.
67%.
Yeah.
Just wiped out.
Right. And employment for programmers in the U.S. dropped 27.5% in that exact same window. And unemployment for recent computer science graduates hit 6.1%.
Yeah, that is a fundamental structural shift. That's not a temporary market correction. 76% of employers are currently hiring equal or fewer entry-level workers than they did the previous year.
Which makes sense if you think about what juniors actually do.
Exactly. The traditional on-ramp to a lucrative white-collar career is just vanishing. Because the very tasks we used to assign to juniors, writing boilerplate code, summarizing documents, basic data formatting, those are the exact tasks that current AI models do flawlessly and instantly.
Think of the corporate world like a giant career ladder, right? You usually expect the bottom rungs to be a little crowded, maybe a bit creaky as everyone fights for a foothold.
Right.
But the data shows those bottom five rungs haven't just broken under the weight. Management has taken a saw and completely removed them. You can't even begin the climb.
It's brutal. And if you want to see the mechanics of that structural shift happening in real time, you have to look at freelancers. They act as the ultimate canary in the coal mine for corporate behavior.
That makes total sense, because freelancers are, like, the most flexible, unprotected part of a company's workforce. You don't need to go through HR or offer severance to cut a freelancer. You just stop giving them contracts.
Precisely. Which is why the Source essay highlights this corporate credit card data from Ramp.
Oh, this part was fascinating.
It's crucial because we aren't looking at, you know, surveys where executives might lie to look innovative to their boards. We're looking at cold, hard enterprise spending.
The actual receipts.
Right. The data shows corporate spending on freelance platforms plummeted from 0.66% of total spend down to 0.14%.
Yeah.
But in that exact same window, spending on AI model providers surged from literally zero to roughly 3%.
Wow. So that isn't some vague trend. That is direct quantified substitution. They took the budget from human freelancers and handed it directly to AI subscriptions.
The casualties are really stark. Freelance writing volume dropped 30%. Freelance development work dropped 21%. But translators have experienced the absolute ground zero of this displacement.
Yeah, the translation numbers were just heartbreaking.
We are talking about professionals who went from billing 50 to 60 hours a week translating dense documents to suddenly having zero incoming work. And the work that does remain has devolved into something called post-editing.
Right, where they're basically just janitors for the AI output.
Exactly. Instead of translating a text natively, they're just hired to quickly fix the awkward phrasing of a machine translation, and they're doing it for, like, a quarter of their historical rates.
That sounds absolutely demoralizing. And, you know, it feeds right into the second big prediction the 2024 essays got right. The extreme concentration of capital.
Yeah, Lean's prediction.
Right. Lean predicted wealth would hoard around the creators of AI. Looking at the data, calling him correct almost feels like an understatement at this point.
He was unbelievably conservative. I mean, in 2025, artificial intelligence absorbed 50% of all global venture capital.
Half of it.
Half of the venture funding on the entire planet went into a single sector.
And the statistic that completely blew my mind was the concentration within that sector. OpenAI and Anthropic, literally just two companies, accounted for 14% of all venture capital deployed worldwide.
Yeah.
Not 14% of AI funding, 14% of everything.
What's fascinating here is that when Luke Drego warned about a few actors controlling intelligence back in 2024, it sounded like hyperbolic doomcast.
Like a sci-fi villain plot.
Right. But today, it is just a factual description of market reality. NVIDIA hit a $4.4 trillion market cap. Big tech collectively committed $650 billion to AI capital expenditures for 2026 alone. The sheer gravitational pull of that capital is just warping the entire structure of the economy.
And the result of that gravity is this brutal hollowing out of the middle class. Like, Wall Street is currently executing plans to cut 200,000 jobs over the next 3 to 5 years. We saw accounting AI adoption explode from 9% to 41% in a single year.
Which completely upends a long-held economic assumption, you know. For decades, conventional wisdom dictated that blue-collar physical labor would be automated first.
Right, the robots in the factories.
Exactly. The $80,000 a year white-collar knowledge worker was supposed to be completely safe because their job required complex judgment.
The spreadsheet jockeys thought they were untouchable.
Yeah, they really did.
But the data proves the exact opposite. The white-collar worker is currently the most exposed category on the board. So Drago and Lane nailed the collapse of entry-level work, and they nailed the capital hoarding.
They absolutely did.
But I need to hit pause here and introduce some major friction. We just laid out a genuinely terrifying scorecard. Junior jobs erased, freelancers wiped out, big tech hoarding hundreds of billions of dollars.
Sounds pretty apocalyptic.
Right. If all of that is the absolute truth, why hasn't the broader macro economy completely collapsed?
Right.
Where is the mass jobs apocalypse? I mean, I can walk outside right now and society is fundamentally still functioning.
And that tension is the most important part of the essay. It leads us directly to the plot, twists the areas where the 2024 doomsayers missed the mark completely.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the Yale Budget Lab ran this massive data analysis through November 2025. They measured unemployment rates for occupations highly exposed to AI and compared them to non-exposed occupations.
Uh-huh.
They found no significant macro-level difference.
I am genuinely struggling to reconcile those two realities. How can you have direct substitution happening on corporate credit cards but no significant difference in broader unemployment?
Because the disruption is highly sectoral and incredibly gradual. Yes, there were between 55,000 and 76,000 jobs directly lost to AI layoffs in 2025.
Which is a lot of people.
It is. And that accounted for about 4.5% of total layoffs, rising to 8% in early 2026. Those are real humans losing their livelihoods, which is a tragedy. But an 8% slice of total layoffs does not trigger a civilizational collapse.
Okay, then what is actually driving the corporate layoffs we keep seeing in the headlines if it isn't, like, an army of hyper-competent AGI programs secretly running the back office?
This is perhaps the most shocking revelation of the source material. It introduces this concept of AI washing.
Oh, this is so good.
The Harvard Business Review published data in January 2026 that finally exposes the man behind the curtain. 55% of employers who executed AI-driven layoffs publicly admit they now regret the decision.
Wait. More than half of these companies regret firing their people? Why?
Because when they looked at the balance sheets, 95% of their recent AI investments showed zero return on investment.
That is wild. So people aren't losing their jobs to a hyper-intelligent machine. They are losing their jobs to a slick PowerPoint deck about AI's theoretical potential.
Exactly. That is the tragic irony of the intelligence curse right now. Much of the displacement is purely corporate theater. Executives feel immense pressure from investors and boards to execute some grand AI transformation.
Right. They have to look cutting edge.
So they fire a chunk of their staff to look lean and futuristic on the quarterly earnings call. But they aren't actually transforming their operations because the technology simply isn't reliable enough yet to fully automate their specific, messy, real-world workflows.
The lost paychecks are completely real, but the pause is entirely narrative. It's a hype cycle causing real-world casualties. And, you know, the doomsayers missed something else. Huge, right? The government response. Lane essentially argued that nation-states would just roll over and surrender to big tech.
Yeah, the logic in 2024 was that if a tech monopoly can literally manufacture intelligence, a traditional government would have no leverage. Like, why invest in public education or citizen welfare if you can just let tech giants manage societal productivity?
But the legislative data from 2025 and 2026 shows Democratic governments are pushing back aggressively.
Very aggressively.
Like, we're seeing the No Robot Bosses Act moving through Congress right now. And I want to clarify how that actually works for a second, because the name sounds like a B-movie sci-fi plot.
It really does.
It's essentially legislation that prevents automated algorithms from making final hiring or firing decisions without a human in the loop. It mandates that a person has to legally sign off on the algorithm's recommendation.
And it's not just the U.S. federal government. We're also seeing robust state-level employment protections passed in California, Colorado, and Illinois. Mm-hmm. The European Union fully ratified the EU AI Act, which places massive liabilities on companies deploying high-risk systems.
And the UK.
Right. The UK is even engaged in serious parliamentary debates about establishing a universal basic income that is explicitly funded by taxing AI displacement.
Taxing the automation to fund the displaced? I mean, that is the exact opposite of surrendering to a tech monopoly. But if we are talking about what completely shattered the 2024 predictions, we have to talk about open source.
Oh, without a doubt. The open source movement exposed the fatal structural flaw in Drago's core analogy that AI is the new oil.
Because Drago's entire premise was that achieving AGI would require such an unfathomable amount of centralized capital to build that only a few mega corporations could ever afford to play the game. They would just have this impregnable moat around the technology forever.
And then a model named DeepSeek V4 was released.
I remember when that dropped. DeepSeek trained a cutting-edge, world-class model for $5.6 million.
It's nothing in tech terms.
Exactly. That is roughly one-tenth the cost of what Meta spent training their Llama model. But I need to ask you to explain the mechanics of that. How do you slash the cost by 90% and still get the exact same intelligence?
It basically came down to sheer algorithmic efficiency and meticulous data curation. Instead of just throwing massive amounts of brute force computing power at a mountain of garbage internet data, which is incredibly expensive, by the way, the researchers optimized the underlying math.
Work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. They filtered the training data so the model learned faster and more efficiently. And when the broader market realized that a world-class model could be trained for millions instead of billions, NVIDIA lost $600 billion in market cap in a single trading day.
Because the market instantly recognized that the trillion-dollar moat was actually a puddle. We also saw a company named RC, a team of just 30 people, build a 400 billion parameter model that matched Meta's performance on industry benchmarks.
30 people. It's unbelievable.
And just for context, when we say parameters, think of them like synapses in a human brain. The more parameters, the more complex connections the model can make. Building a 400 billion synapse brain with a 30-person team is astounding.
And it fundamentally dismantles the oil analogy.
It totally does. Let's apply Drago's logic to the reality of 2026. Oil stays expensive because geology dictates it. You have to physically discover it, drill deep into the earth, build massive steel pipelines, and construct billion-dollar refineries.
Right. Highly centralized.
You cannot open source a Saudi oil field in your garage. But compute. Computing power gets cheaper because physics dictates it. Moore's law, you know, the historical trend of computing power doubling while costs have, along with algorithmic optimization, means technology naturally democratizes. The open source community is accelerating that physical reality at breakneck speed.
So if we establish that big tech isn't going to establish a permanent, unbreakable monopoly, and the global economy hasn't collapsed into dystopia, what exactly is happening?
Good question.
Well, our source essay defines the reality of 2026 not as an apocalypse, but as a bifurcation.
A splitting of the timeline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The fundamental takeaway is that the exact same technology in the exact same year is causing radically opposite economic experiences, depending entirely on where you sit in the market.
Okay, let's look at the winners on one side of that split. If you have the right skills right now, you are basically living in a modern golden age. The data shows that possessing applied AI skills now commands a 56% salary premium in the market.
56%.
Up from 25% just 2 years ago. And the specific job title, AI engineer, saw 143% growth.
But you know, the real leverage isn't even found in salaries. It's in venture creation. Solo founders, individuals building entire companies by themselves using AI agents now account for 36.3% of all new ventures.
Wow.
The essay actually highlights one solo founder who orchestrated an $80 million exit in just 6 months.
Wait, how does one person even build something worth $80 million in 6 months?
By acting as a manager of specialized AI agents. Instead of spending months hiring a 50-person agency, this founder deployed one agent to write the front-end code, another to run automated quality assurance testing, and a third to optimize the marketing spend.
That's insane.
They essentially condensed an entire corporate structure into a single laptop. Dario Amodei predicted the one-person billion-dollar company would arrive by the end of 2026, and the data suggests we are right on the cusp of that reality.
The rise of the super individual. But then you look across the chasm at the losers in this bifurcation.
And the contrast is really grim. While that solo founder cashes an $80 million check, the broader tech sector in India saw overall pay plummet by 40%.
40% across the board.
Yeah. Junior developers can't even secure a first-round interview anymore.
Yeah.
It is a devastating loss of leverage for the bottom half of the traditional knowledge economy.
And it all seems to come down to your relationship with the tool, which brings up this fascinating concept from Amodei that the essay heavily emphasizes, the centaur era.
Yes, the centaur. Think of the mythological creature, right? Half human, half horse.
Yeah.
In the context of 2026 economics, it represents a hybrid intelligence.
Okay.
The data clearly shows that right now, teams utilizing a combination of human intuition and AI leverage are vastly outperforming both pure human teams and pure AI systems.
To make that concrete, like, a centaur in the wild looks like a senior programmer who spends all day thinking deeply about complex system architecture, while their AI tool instantly writes all the tedious, repetitive boilerplate code. They are doing the high-level steering. The AI is providing the horsepower.
That is the absolute optimal unit of productivity today.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. There is a ticking clock on this entire dynamic. Amode has publicly warned that this centaur window, this specific historical period where the human plus the AI is the absolute best way to work, might only stay open for a few years.
And that is a critical point to internalize. The skill premium for operating these tools is very real right now. But the window to actually develop those skills and establish yourself as a highly paid centaur is actively narrowing.
Because the AI is catching up to the human part.
Precisely. Huh. As the underlying models continue to compound in capability, the need for the human half of the centaur begins to shrink.
So, you know, if you are listening to this on your commute, your personal on-ramp to becoming a super individual isn't going to be open forever. The highway is literally being built while you're driving on it, but the exit ramp to traditional career stability might close in 36 months.
It's a tight time frame.
It really is. Now, we've talked a lot about macroeconomics, venture funding, and global open source trends, but I want to connect this directly back to you, the listener. How is this bifurcation actually affecting people on the ground psychologically?
This is where the Source essay reaches its most profound conclusion, I think. The original 2024 essays assumed the artificial intelligence itself would be the destructive force. But 12 months of data suggests something entirely different.
Right.
The real intelligence curse in 2026 is the narrative itself.
The stories we are telling ourselves about the technology are doing infinitely more damage than the technology itself.
Let's look at the gap between perception and reality. We know that 97% of knowledge tasks are theoretically AI feasible. That's the giant blue ocean on our map. But Anthropic's own usage data reveals that 30% of corporate workers have had absolutely zero contact with AI tools.
Zero.
Literally none.
A third of the workforce hasn't even touched it, yet the fear is absolutely everywhere.
The fear is so ubiquitous that it has actually birthed a formally recognized clinical framework, ARD, AI Replacement Dysfunction. 71% of workers report a persistent daily fear of permanent displacement by automation.
Even the ones who've never used it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that psychological fear is dictating major life choices right now. People who have never even prompted a language model are terrified because the viral story of AI will take your job is just so much more vivid than the boring reality.
The reality being the tiny puddle.
Exactly. The reality is that adoption is uneven, implementation is painfully slow, and it is highly dependent on exactly what sector you work in.
And that psychological damage translates directly into economic self-sabotage. Young people are looking at the apocalyptic headlines and abandoning their computer science degrees in droves.
That's so sad.
Which is wildly ironic because they are dropping out at the exact historical moment when AI engineering skills command the highest salary premium in the global market.
It creates a tragic, self-fulfilling prophecy. A student thinks, oh, well, AI will eventually code everything, so why should I learn to code? So they quit. And by quitting, they ensure they lack the foundational technical knowledge required to actually steer the AI tools as a centaur.
Right. People are accepting terrible employment terms because they feel they have lost all their leverage. They are actively avoiding entrepreneurship because they assume a tech giant will just crush them with an algorithm anyway. They are experiencing real, tangible economic consequences for a displacement that, for the vast majority of them, simply hasn't happened yet.
The narrative is reshaping the economy far ahead of the actual technology.
So let's pull all of this together. The ultimate takeaway from this 12-month data scorecard is that the future is not a binary switch. It is neither a post-scarcity utopia nor a dystopian apocalypse.
No, it's much messier than that.
Exactly. The original doomsayers missed the power of open source to democratize access. They completely missed the corporate AI washing phenomenon, and they entirely missed the centaur window we are currently living in. The curve of history right now is bending in multiple directions at the exact same time.
And which direction that curve bends for you depends entirely on how you choose to adapt today. It depends on whether you succumb to the paralyzing narrative of the intelligence curse, or whether you actively learn to ride the centaur while the window is still open.
So what does this all mean? We know we are living in this centaur window right now, where fusing your uniquely human intuition with AI leverage is the ultimate cheat code for success. But as we established earlier, that window is closing. And I want to leave you with a provocative thought to mull over as you go about the rest of your day.
Looking past the current horizon.
Exactly. If Dario Amodei is right, and the centaur window shuts in just a few short years, what happens after? If AI eventually becomes so capable that it doesn't even need the human plus to operate at peak efficiency, the rules of the game change entirely. The ocean of theoretical exposure finally swallows the puddle of actual adoption.
And then what?
Right. When productivity and intelligence are completely solved by machines, what uniquely human trait becomes the ultimate luxury good in a post-centaur economy? Think about that the next time you open your phone and see a headline about the future.